Our film critic David Edelstein has completed his 2006 10 Best list. But before he runs it down for us, we're going to talk about some of the movies that are opening for the holidays. David is also the film critic for New York Magazine.
Welcome, David. You know, for the past few years, around the holidays, there have been movie adaptations of Broadway musicals. There was Chicago, Phantom of the Opera, Rent, and now it's Dreamgirls. So what do you think of Dreamgirls?
Well, it's better than Phantom of the Opera and Rent, both of which made my skin crawl. And, you know, right from the start, there's this enormous sense of occasion as these three black women, this girl group goes onto the stage and you know, we're in this club and it's colorful and it's loud and we just, you know, it's just in our bloodstream right from the start. And then I think the air kind of goes out of it. I mean, I hate to bring down the room, but I was a little disappointed by a lot of the movie. You know, it's inspired by Motown. It's inspired by one of the most momentous cultural upheavals in our country's history, when sort of black artists finally moved into the mainstream. As presented, the movie is kind of a morality play. It stars Jamie Foxx as a Berry Gordy-like figure who gradually becomes corrupt, who throws out the group's lead singer, who's played by Jennifer Hudson, and who has a much blacker sound and who's a little pudgy, and goes with the sort of Diana Ross figure, Dina, played by Beyoncé, and because she has a much lighter, whiter sound, she's gorgeous, and it's sort of about the destruction of this family as they move into the mainstream. You know, one of the problems I have with it is the music just stinks. The numbers that they do on stage are sort of reliably second rate, but the interstitial stuff, the Broadway musical stuff, where they sing instead of speak in moments of heightened emotion, that stuff is just sludge. It's like Lionel Richie doing recitative at the Met, and the dancing is a little chopped up, and most of the numbers sort of segue into montages. What the movie has is performances. It's got Eddie Murphy in this great comeback. He's not just electric on stage, but he also you know, when his character slips into drug addiction as a result of being disappointed, his features sag, and you realize, you know, I've never seen Eddie Murphy not on before. It's quite a remarkable breakthrough.
What about Jennifer Hudson? She of course, was one of the contestants on American Idol, and she's been nominated for a Golden Globe for her performance, as has Beyoncé and Eddie Murphy. What'd you think of her?
Well, you know, if you're a betting person, Jennifer Hudson is a lock for that award. It is a nuclear debut. We bring that backstory to it. Just about everybody in the audience knows that she was booted out of American Idol probably too early. And she's booted out of the group here for probably many of the same reasons. And so when she has her big number, and I'm telling you I'm not going, in which she affirms her love for this character played by Jamie Foxx, you know, there's almost, you feel so elated when she just smokes those high notes. It's between a bawl and a shriek. I mean, this woman can scream on key. People at the screening I was at, you know, just burst into applause after it was over, and some of them were standing. What a performance.
Now, Will Smith and his son are in a new movie called The Pursuit of Happiness. What's that one about?
Well, that's a kind of an economic cliffhanger. It's about a man played by Smith who's trying desperately to become a stockbroker. He has invested in these kind of ridiculous bone density scanners that he can't seem to sell. His family is slipping further into poverty. He gets a glimpse of life, you know, at Dean Witter. And, you know, and he wants to do it, but in order to do it, he has to become an unpaid intern for 6 months. And the chances are, you know, they pick one person out of 20. So he's making no money. His wife leaves him. He's got this little kid. He's evicted from his apartment. He's evicted from a cheap motel room. He you know, he can't get into a shelter with his kid because there are too many people. He has to sleep in the restroom of the BART station in San Francisco. It's an unbelievably sort of grim and tortured portrait of a man who kind of has to hustle to save himself and his kid. The movie's been criticized criticized by a lot of people for somehow or other, you know, playing into these ridiculous capitalist fantasies, you know, rags to riches fantasies. I actually think it's a horror movie. I think it's sort of relentlessly scary, you know, how kind of thin the membrane is between prosperity and homelessness.
Well, here's another movie for the holidays, The Good German. Now, I should mention that this movie is opening in select cities for the holidays and will open in the rest of the country January 19th. Now, this is a movie that's set in post-World War II Berlin. It's directed by Steven Soderbergh, stars George Clooney. It's shot in black and white using the film technology of the era. So, David, does it come off like a good film or just an exercise in style?
It comes off as a colossal mistake. And I say this as somebody who thinks Steven Soderbergh has an uncanny instinct for fitting his style to the content of whatever it is he's doing in movies like The Limey and Aaron Brockovich and some of his more experimental films. In this case, I think what he's decided to do is make the anti-Casablanca in the style of Casablanca with echoes of John Huston and Hitchcock and The Third Man. And I think the idea, I'm just guessing, is that this old movie romanticism is meant to play off the fact that the characters have all done terrible things to survive the war. And there's this atmosphere of devastation and realpolitik in which, you know, the Americans are desperately trying to get hold of the Nazi scientists, you know, in their coming conflict with the Soviet Union. But what happens is that just remains intellectualized. And the stylization, which is quite striking on its own, just keeps you at arm's length from the characters. So you really don't know what's going on inside these people. George Clooney, you know, comes off, you know, completely sort of impotent in the film. And Cate Blanchett is kind of shrouded in shadow and lowers her voice. She has the sort of husky tones of Marlene Dietrich. And I thought I was watching a Carol Burnett parody of Dietrich.
Now, Clint Eastwood has a movie opening in New York and L.A. for the holidays, and then it will open wider in January. And this is a companion to his movie that opened earlier this year called Flags of Our Fathers. And Flags of Our Fathers was about American soldiers who fought in Iwo Jima in World War II. And this new movie is called Letters from Iwo Jima, and it's told from a Japanese point of view. Tell us a little bit about this movie, David.
Well, it's that story. It's the Battle of Iwo Jima kind of turned inside out. We didn't really see any of the faces of the Japanese soldiers. Now we're inside the mountain. You know, they built tunnels in the mountain. They knew they were going to die, but they kept fighting anyway because, you know, it was important to the pride of the mother country. And, you know, we sort of get to see the other side. And the movie is a it's very different in tone from Flags of Our Fathers, which sort of dealt with American heroic archetypes and how far, you know, removed they were from the very harsh reality of war. This time, it's just basically a kind of a neutral but deeply humanistic study of a lot of soldiers who don't want to be there, who don't want to die, you know, who understand that they have to, who would be shot if they tried to run away. The protagonists of the film are these sort of two almost clownish innocents who don't want to be there who end up running from one end of the mountain to the other and hooking up with various commanders, some of whom want to kill them for surrendering and some of them, you know, who just want to put them back in the battle. And so it becomes like this sort of sickening, farcical house of horrors that pretty much ends with most of the cast being wiped out. Like Flags, it's shot in, all the color is leached out, and the only really vivid colors are the kind of brick red that explodes from the characters when they're shot. Or in one sequence, a group of Japanese soldiers, rather than surrender, blows themselves up with their own grenades. It's very striking. I think it's better to consider, you know, together with Flags of Our Fathers as a movie that says that even a just and necessary war is just an abomination of nature.
Okay, well, Rocky Balboa is back for the holidays. It's the sixth Rocky film, though, even though I haven't seen all of them, it feels like more than that.
Oh, bless you.
So, you know, people have been talking about this movie as if it's going to be a great embarrassment for Stallone. Is it?
No, it's not. It's actually pretty hilarious when you think about how he comes through within this movie. I mean, it's old Sylvester Stallone trying to prove he's vital by making a movie about old Rocky trying to prove that he's vital. And, you know, the movie sort of on its own ridiculously dumb formula terms delivers. I understand to my horror that I'm being quoted in the ads for it saying, you know, I was on my feet in the final thing, which is true. I mean, what they're not going to use is the part where I say, you know, whether I make fun of Stallone's plastic surgery and talk about how you really have to have your IQ in order to think it's a good movie. But, you know, I think the movie earns a lot of goodwill and makes you want to have your IQ, frankly.
There's two movies by Mexican directors who are friends of one another opening for the holidays. Well, tell us about those films.
Well, those films are Alfonso Cuarón's Children of Men, which is in English, and Guillermo del Toro's Pan's Labyrinth, which is in Spanish. And what's interesting is that they are both portraits of encroaching fascism. They are shatteringly violent. They are tragic movies. Pan's Labyrinth is set in the past, you know, in the sort of beginning of the Franco era. And, you know, it's about a little girl who enters this sort of fairy tale fantasy world in order to escape the extreme sadism of her stepfather. Children of Men, which is based on a P.D. James book, is and with Clive Owen and Julianne Moore, is set in England in a future where women have become kind of inexplicably sterile and all the refugees are rounded up. They are both extraordinarily bleak movies. I mean, this might be the most depressing 1-2 punch, dystopian punch in the history of movies.
As always, there are several family films around for the holidays. There's Deck the Halls, Unaccompanied Minors, Night at the Museum, Charlotte's Web. Do you have one to recommend of
and
all of those?
I recommend Charlotte's Web. I mean, the best thing that I can say about Charlotte's Web is that they don't ruin it. It's actually a kind of delightful film, if you can accept Julia Roberts' voice coming out of a spider and sounding very much like Julia Roberts. She doesn't do much. She doesn't have a lot of vocal range, our Julia, but she's very nice. And, you know, it's live action. And, you know, nowadays with CGI, they can, you know, really make pigs talk. You believe a pig can talk. The wonderful thing about the movie is that it's narrated by Sam Shepard, and I just never realized what a fantastic voice he has.
Oh, yeah.
It's so American. It's got a tiny little bit of a quaver in it. You know, you kind of hear the hipster and the sort of narrator from our town at the same time. I don't know. It's beautiful. It made me cry. It was so weird to get up the next day and after sort of rooting for this little pig to escape being slaughtered to, you know, make bacon for the kids. But I guess that's the paradox of being so far from our food source, right?
So if you had one film to recommend for the holidays, what would it be?
Well, I love the film, in addition to Pursuit of Happiness, I love the film called Notes on a Scandal, which is getting a limited release, but believe me, you'll hear about it. It stars Judi Dench as a kind of repressed lesbian who has Cate Blanchett in her sights, and it's all done, you know, there's a lot of voiceover, and you just realize this woman is a monstrous narcissist, but you're fascinated by her much as you would be by Richard III.
My guest is Fresh Air's film critic David Edelstein. We'll find out what's on his 2006 10 Best list after a break. This is Fresh Air. If you're just joining us, my guest is David Edelstein. He's Fresh Air's film critic and also film critic for New York Magazine. And David, it's time to present your 10 Best list. So why don't we start by just having you read through it for us?
Okay, well, first I want to say that, as usual with these lists, I cheat like mad. I can't decide, and so I group things together, and there are probably 15 or 16 movies on here. But by gum, you know, I'll stand by every one of them. Number 10, United 93, the docudrama Number 9, A Prairie Home Companion, the last film of the great Robert Altman. Number 8 are three religious documentaries that make a pretty good case for atheism, Jonestown, Jesus Camp, and Deliver Us from Evil. Number 7 is Jonathan Demme's concert film, Neil Young, Heart of Gold. Number 6 is an Algerian film called, in this country, Days of Glory, kind of a generic retitling of a movie that was caused a sensation at Cannes last year called Indigene. Number 5 are Flags of Our Fathers and Letters from Iwo Jima, the two Clint Eastwood movies I've already discussed. Number 4 are also two movies I've discussed, Pan's Labyrinth and Children of Men. Number 3 is a documentary called Our Brand is Crisis. And number 2 is, once again, a group of documentaries, all of which illuminate the situation in Iraq, Blood of Our Brother, Iraq in Fragments, Iraq for Sale, and The War Tapes. And my number one movie of the year is Stephen Frears' The Queen.
There's really a lot of movies on that list that have to do with war and politics in one way or another.
Yeah, funny thing.
I wonder who'd guess why. It in these times?
I just plucked that out of the air. I have no idea. Yeah. I mean, I think it's extraordinary how films reflect that right now. Obviously, the documentaries, but also, you know, the post 9/11 era, the post Iraq era is beginning to sort of seep into all our films. Even James Bond, even Casino Royale reflects kind of the bitter realities of our situation right now.
Well, let's look at some of your runners up for the year.
Sure.
You want to go
through
the list?
Well, sure. I mean, I love Notes on a Scandal. I love the film Half Nelson, in which Ryan Gosling, giving probably the male performance of the year, plays a crack-addicted history teacher who, you know, attempts to save a young black girl played by Sharika Epps, and, you know, she ends up saving him. Marie Antoinette, the very deeply flawed but incredibly passionate and intimate and exciting work by Sofia Coppola. Spike Lee's big comeback, Inside Man, just a delightful studio picture, sort of caper movie. The Proposition, which is a really brutal and disgusting Western set in Australia and written by Nick Cave. Casino Royale, which is, you know, the best Bond movie in decades and features a great, you know, rough new James Bond. The History Boys, the very quickie film adaptation of Alan Bennett's delightful play. And two cartoons, two animated films I thought were great this year. Happy Feet, which had some of my favorite dancing of the year, and Monster House, which is just an extraordinary, you know, horror movie for kids.
This is mixing apples and oranges, but I can't stop myself. I'm going to just put in a shout-out here for all of the actors in The Wire who gave such extraordinary performances this season. And I know it's not a movie, so I shouldn't even be bringing them up, but it's such great acting, I feel like. I just want to give it a nod.
Well, I have to tell you, yeah. I happen to know that one major critic, mm-hmm. and a friend of mine, I'm not going to name him, is making Wire his number one movie of the year.
Bravo. Oh,
I agree. Okay. I agree. There's a great deal more satisfaction to be had in some of the, especially the HBO and Showtime miniseries over the last year than you're going to get at the movies.
Well, David, I wish you a good year and happy holidays. And thank you so much for talking with us about the movies of the year.
Well, same to you, Terry, and I hope you enjoy a lot of popcorn and a lot of overpriced sodas.
David Edelstein is film critic for Fresh Air and New York Magazine. You'll find his 10 best list on our website, freshair.npr.org.